In a world where uncertainty reigns supreme, where shadows of chaos dance at every turn, one truth emerges unyielding. Preparation is not a luxury, but a lifeline. Behold the Wellness Company, a beacon of readiness amidst the tempestuous seas of fate. Envision a sanctuary of tranquility, where the tumult of unforeseen medical crises finds no purchase. The Wellness Company's Medical Emergency Kit stands as a bastion of assurance, a fortress of resilience against the unseen foes of health. Within its sacred confines lie the tools of salvation. Ivermectin, to ward off the insidious whispers of disease. Emergency antibiotics, to quell the raging storms of infection. Antivirals, to vanquish the relentless tides of contagion, and more. The Wellness Company Medical Emergency Kit is not merely a collection of supplies, it is the embodiment of preparedness itself. Crafted by the hands of esteemed healers led by luminaries such as Dr. Peter McCullough, Dr. James Thorpe, Dr. Harvey Risch, and Dr. Drew Pinsky, this kit stands as the pinnacle of safety, the zenith of prevention. These truth-seeking doctors have forged a testament to vigilance, a testament to the unwavering pursuit of well-being. Embrace the certainty that comes from being armed against adversity. Embrace the Wellness Company, for in its embrace lies the promise of resilience, the promise of a brighter tomorrow amidst the chaos of today. Don't wait for the next crisis to strike. Visit twc.health/strangeplanet and use promo code STRANGEPLANET for an exclusive 10% discount. Prepare today and rest easy tomorrow.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Families have a lot going on. Let Ollie help manage the mental load with new cognitive health supplements for everyone 4 and up, like delicious Lolly Focus Pops or Lolly Mellow Pops for kids. And for parents, try 3 new Brainy Chews to help you focus, chill out, or get energized. Find these cognitive health buddies for the whole fam at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Conspiracy Unlimited with Richard Serrett.
On this episode of Conspiracy Unlimited, the true story of Rodney Alcala, the game show killer.
Now let's see, Baxter number one is a successful photographer who got his start when his father found him in the dark room at the age of 13, fully developed. Between takes, he might find him skydiving or motorcycling. Please welcome Rodney Alcala. Rod, welcome.
He won. She picked him. And they come out and meet, and then they have the grand prize some weekend in a hotel with dinner and all this. Very romantic, right? And so, you know, it goes to break, and they're talking, and she was so creeped out by him. She wouldn't go on the trip, she wouldn't go for dinner, and she wouldn't even stick around at the show.
This podcast is brought to you by Family Bunker Designs. If you believe things are headed in a scary direction these days, then you'll want to listen to this message. 4 years ago, John Hartman, a retired military and certified disaster and survival expert, created the ultimate solution to keep his family safe from danger. He built a family survival bunker. With the advice of experts, he decided to share what he learned and publish the ultimate guide to family bunker construction. His designs are highly affordable, yet your family bunker will be safe, well hidden, and strong enough to withstand almost any disaster or terrorist attack. These days, with so many threats out there, a safe hideout is essential for security. And right now, when you order the Family Bunker Guide, you'll get 3 bonus survival guides absolutely free. Don't put it off. Get this life-saving information now. Learn more at clearbroadcast.com. That's clearbroadcast.com.
Conspiracy Unlimited with Richard Serrett. Pursuing the truth wherever it leads. Exposing evil and corruption and the secret machinations of powerful elites. revealing the high strangeness beneath the surface of her supposed reality. Coming to you from his studio beneath the stairs, here's Richard Serrett.
I spent an inordinate amount of time watching television as a child. We had maybe, a half a dozen channels using the old aerial. And it was an old floor model TV. I don't remember the make, but the plastic knobs, remember those? They would break. And eventually, and some of you of a certain age will remember this, those plastic knobs would break. And so in order to turn the channel, you had to use a pair of pliers to grab the little metal post where the plastic knob used to be. I remember rushing home from school so I could get to the pliers before my older brother and three sisters. You see, whoever controlled the pliers controlled the TV set. And I wanted to watch Batman, with Adam West, of course, and my three sisters were in love with Bobby Sherman and David Soul. They were two of the co-stars of a TV show called Here Come the Brides. So that was the deal. But besides Batman and Star Trek, I loved game shows. I loved Password with Alan Ludden and the great celebrity guests like Tony Randall, who was brilliant on Password. And I loved the Hollywood Squares with Paul Lynde and Charlie Weaver and Marty Allen, all gone. God rest their souls. It was so wonderful and innocent. Occasionally, I would watch The Dating Game with Jim Lang. It wasn't really age-appropriate. There were a lot of sexual innuendos, so I didn't watch it that much. But it's hard to imagine, back in September 1978, Rodney Alcala was selected on The Dating Game as the winner by the lovely Bachelorette, and everyone seemed to agree he was the right choice. But behind the handsome face, the successful photographer Alcala was in the middle of a killing sexual rampage. He's been compared to the likes of Ted Bundy, with as many as 215 murders to his name. He would torture his victims by strangulation until they lost consciousness. Then he would rape them. And then when they came to, he would repeat this process several times before finally killing them. This evil carnage is detailed in The Killing Game, the true story of Rodney Alcala, the game show killer, by author Alan R. Warren. Alan co-hosts the popular true crime radio show House of Mystery, which is heard on KKNW 1150 AM out of Seattle. He's also the best-selling author of several true crime books, including his latest, The Killing Game. And he's also a contributor to the True Crime Case Files magazine and Serial Killer magazine. Alan Warren, welcome to Conspiracy Unlimited. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Tell us a little bit about your radio program that is dedicated to true crime. This is, we know about the success of true crime nonfiction, but it's really taken off on podcasts and radio as well.
It was something we were doing one day a week, and now it's 5 days a week out of Seattle, and it's picked up on stations throughout the states, Utah and Phoenix and Idaho now and all over. So, yeah, people are just fascinated with true crime.
And the program is called House of Mystery, and that's heard on KKNW 1150 AM in Seattle.
That's right. Yeah, that's the home station.
And they can pick up, there are a number of affiliates. Is there a website?
Yeah, actually, if you go to the KKNW and House of Mystery, it'll have all the connections there. Or I have a website called somethingweirdmedia.com, and we produce the show as well as others, and books and everything. It's just kind of everything to do with true crime and mystery.
When you think about that there is enough, you know, serial killers and murder and mayhem and evil in the world to fill five shows a week on the one hand, it is kind of a sad commentary, isn't it?
It's endless, and it is sad because there is no shortage of material. It's crazy. We could go even more than 5 days a week.
And what do you think is the appeal for both readers of true crime, which is, the last I checked, that is the most popular genre, and women in particular seem to enjoy true crime. What is the what's the appeal, the allure, do you think?
You know, I can't quite capture what it is that draws so many people. Maybe it's because it tells the story in a book, and you get to learn about the characters, and it represents people you know, people in your lives every day, and how easy it is that these crimes happen, and they're just with normal people like us, and I think that maybe brings it close to home.
The last time you and I talked was about Canadian serial killer Russell Williams. This time around, we're going to look at the game show killer, Rodney Alcala. And the fact that he was he had raped an 8-year-old girl, he had murdered at least 4 others, and yet somehow found his way onto the dating game, a very popular show I remember watching as a child growing up, hosted by Jim Lang in that hideous blue tuxedo. How was it that Rodney Alcala found his way onto that game show, given his horrible killing spree?
Yeah, you know, the best answer I can come up with for him was just his charm and able to work his way in anywhere. You know, he got a job at the LA Times, and he had committed the attack and rapes by then, had already been to jail, and they didn't even check.
He was a registered sex offender.
He was, but they didn't even realize that he was working for them. And he also got a job he studied in New York, NYU, with Roman Polanski, who was a major filmmaker in the 60s. And, you know, he had the charm and the wherewithal to be able to talk his way into anything. I can't explain how he got away with so much for so long, and he's still doing it to this day. He's still getting away with it.
Right. I guess he's on death row, appealing his death sentence. He's in Corcoran, which is where Charlie Manson was until he passed, right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But, you know, he keeps winning his appeals. You know, he's never going to get put to death. It's become a show. It's just like a game for him. He's constantly winning appeals, and he at the same time, they're finding evidence for other people that he's killed. It's just going to be an endless cycle. It's going to go on far after he's dead.
Let's go back to, was it 1978 or 79 he appeared on the dating game? Take us back to that.
1978.
So, yeah. For those who don't know how the show worked, there were three eligible bachelorettes. They were looking to date somebody, and one bachelorette, right?
Yeah, how did one bachelorette.
And then behind the screen were three prospective dates, and she would question them without seeing them, and at the end of the show, she would pick the one, and they would try to be funny or romantic with their replies and so forth. You've seen the episode, presumably. Tell us what it was it like. I mean, obviously, you know, in hindsight, you'd get the creeps, but was there any indication that this guy was, like, psychotic?
Well, you know, watching it now, and maybe it's just because it's dated, when I was watching it, I thought he was really creepy. And so, of course, right away, I was thinking, well, maybe it's just because, you know, I know who he is now, and it's kind of corny, but I thought he was creepy. She would ask him questions, and he would moan and groan, and he would act very sexual towards her. And she, you know, they would ask stupid questions. She asked something like, you know, they're having breakfast. What would he serve or what would he be? And he said he was the banana and she'd have to peel him. And she, you know, he would be really creepy.
Lots of sexual innuendo. Right.
And just crazy. In fact, he won. She picked him and they come out and meet, and then they have the grand prize some weekend in a hotel with dinner and all this, very romantic, right? And so, you know, it goes to break and they're talking, and she was so creeped out by him. She wouldn't go on the trip. She wouldn't go for dinner, and she wouldn't even stick around at the show.
How did we learn that?
She herself, Cheryl Bradstar, is still alive. And she talks about it now. She's very open about it. If someone wants to, I talk to her, and she's very upfront about it.
So she immediately made the decision after she caught a glimpse of this guy, got a little closer to him, that she wasn't going on this romantic getaway, which was the grand prize.
Right. And you know what? It wasn't his looks. She thought he was an attractive man, and she was all excited until, you know, they go back to the green room, to the back room, and the way he was touching her, the way he was talking to her, and the way he looked at her, she said it was just, it was so creepy, it was so bad, she couldn't even be around him. And she didn't even want to do the close of the show with him, where they stand and kiss, you know, and they all stood there and blew a kiss to the audience.
Right, right.
She was really creeped out, and she didn't go on the trip. That was it.
Jim Lang, the affable host of The Dating Game. I'm trying to remember how he used to introduce each of the contestants, or in this case the eligible bachelors, and he would have some sort of funny throwaway line about each of them. Do you remember how he introduced Rodney Alcala?
Well, he introduced him as a accomplished photographer, and he was. He'd been in the army for a while. He was a paratrooper, could skydive. It was quite good. It wasn't a bad introduction at all.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care, and we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it, all while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Every town has a dark side. This is Andrew Fitzgerald from the Every Town podcast, where every single week we dive into insane and mysterious true crime stories, most of which you've never heard of. Stories like the bizarre disappearance of Tyler Davis in Columbus, Ohio, a 29-year-old father trying to find his way back to his hotel when he disappeared and was never heard from again. And Elizabeth Schoaf from Lugoff, South Carolina, who was abducted from her driveway by a madman and taken to his underground bunker in the woods. We give you all the details you're interested in hearing about without any fluff or fillers, because ain't nobody got time for that. We cover everything from psychopaths to poltergeists, so go check out the Everytown podcast, because every town, no matter how nice it may seem, has a dark side.
Yeah, Lang, I think he had some funny line about Alcala being interested in photography since he was a child or something. His father found him in the darkroom at 13, fully developed or something like that.
Yeah. You're right. Some sort of corny little saying that he did. If only he knew.
So by this time, 1978, again, Rodney Alcala had already killed four, probably more, possibly many more, as we'll find out, and he had raped an 8-year-old girl. Did the game show, the producers, not vet these people at all?
They mustn't have well enough. I think it was the time where, they would vet people, but not to the extent that they do now. Because one thing, it was much harder to do, and it took more time. So I think a lot of associate producers would go by feel. They would meet someone, read over their little application or their entrance, and talk to them. And if they got a good feel, or if they had the right image, they would just put them on. I don't think it was a detailed search. It couldn't have been. There's no way it could have been. Because that was 10 years after the first one he got convicted for, and he was actually on parole for. So there's no way they could have checked.
And the bachelorette, Cheryl Bradshaw, who you say is still living, when she found out about the fact that he's a serial killer and a rapist and a predator of the First Order, did she describe to you where she was when she found out, how she reacted?
Oh, yeah. And with her, she's quite a brave person. She was also very assertive and strong. So for her, it was, she just knew it. And it didn't scare her like I thought it would have. It didn't freak her out. She was so convinced of his character from just that one meeting that she was not surprised. It did not surprise her to find out. And that's kind of how she reacted to me.
Take us back to Rodney Alcala's family life. Where did he grow up? What was his family life like?
It seemed like he was in a good family. Good working father. He was born in San Antonio. And they had a good life. He was one of four siblings. Mother stayed home. They were involved in Catholic school, so they were brought up right. They seemed to be a good family. There were no problems in him. He was good with the other students at school. He was all around a good kid. Their grandmother got really sick when he was about 8, and the family moved down to Mexico until she passed away. Now, something strange happened at that point. When they were in Mexico, within a year, Rodney's father came back and went to L.A. And they told the family it was for work. But after grandmother died, a couple years later, the rest of the family moved back, but they lived separately then from the father. So there was some sort of separation between the mother and the father, and the kids didn't know. This was the first they heard about it. And he was about 12 years old, I would think, then 11 or 12. And so I think it came to a shock to the kids. They weren't living with father anymore.
Right. So, right. And did he become an angry child as a result? Do we know?
Well, no, not at that point. You see, that's kind of the strange thing. He went through high school, good kid, good grades, very popular, had lots of girlfriends. He was the all around good kid. At 19, he joined the paratroopers, went back to Carolina, and even initially the paratroopers said he was very good. He was very good at the job they had him doing, clerking. He was very sharp, on time. People loved him. Everything was going really good. And then his father died while he was in the military. Comes back for the funeral. Everything seems normal. You know, it's normal as can be for a funeral. And then he flies back to go to paratroopers again in Carolina. And a couple months later, he shows up at home out of the blue. His mother's like, well, what are you doing here? You're supposed to be in, back in the Army. And he goes, I've left. He just went AWOL. Just walked away. So she convinced him to turn himself in. She brings him in, and so they do a little psychiatric, I can't even say now, an overview of his mental status. And they actually diagnosed him with an antisocial personality and discharged him. And his security officer said the last couple of months, he'd been really, you know, late. He wasn't doing a very good job. He wasn't focused. So his mother kind of just put that all to, well, he just lost his father. So, but that seemed to be the turning point. The first time you see something go from a pretty good kid, student, go-getter, to all of a sudden, you know, walking away from the Army and being diagnosed with this antisocial personality. And so things started getting shaky at that point.
And then after he leaves the Army, as you mentioned, he enrolled in the UCLA School of Fine Arts, and he's studying film under, well, I'm just going to call him for what he is, the pedophile Roman Polanski at New York University.
Yeah, you know, it could it be stranger? You know, he's studying, but he was good enough to get in to NYU and to get in Polanski School, because, you know, at that time in the 60s, in the later 60s too, Polanski was very famous.
Sure, sure. He was the darling of Hollywood. He was the darling of Hollywood. And regrettably, this is so insidious and toxic, he still is in Hollywood. Yeah. They get up in, Jack Nicholson and Meryl Streep and these people that are, you know, the gods in Hollywood. They still defend him.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty endless. And you know, is that a weird coincidence that Alcala starts studying with him? Like, they both had the same disorder. They both had the same desires for these underage girls. I just thought that was, is that bizarre or what? How did that happen? How did they just find each other?
When did he commit his first crime?
Well, the first one we know about officially was 1968. And that's when he picked up Tal Shapiro. She was an 8-year-old girl in West Hollywood. And he picked her up and took her to his place. And then he beat and raped her and onward. And what happened was, there was a guy that was on the street when he picked her up that thought it was strange, followed them. He went to a corner payphone and called the cops. So two cops came to check it out, and when they knocked on his door, he opened it up. The one cop saw the girl laying on the floor, covered in blood.
Oh, dear.
So the cops bust in, and the girl, at first, they thought, oh, she must be dead, because she was completely covered. But she started coughing, so they ran to her and, were tending to her. And Rodney Alcala runs out the back door, and he gets away. Now, the girl lived because of that. You know, they tended to her, but he did get away. And they actually didn't catch him for that for 3 years.
Right, because he skips town. He leaves the state, goes under an assumed name, John Berger or something, and then that's when he enrolls in NYU.
Yeah, so he's in school, and then in the summer, what's he do? He gets a job at a girl's school, like
a youth camp counselor.
Yeah. He's a counselor at an all-girls school.
Oh, my
girls
God.
Ages 9 to 13. And he did it for 3 summers in a row. This could be a movie so easily. You'd almost not believe it.
Right, right.
And so he's doing this, and now afterwards, you see, for these 3 years, we know now that he killed at least 2 in New York and 3 others in probably the Boston area because of DNA hit.
Right. The first one being in 71 was a, she was a flight attendant. Cornelia Michelle Crilly, I guess, was his first murder victim, correct?
Yes. Yeah. And so he was doing this. And of course nobody knew, until after the fact. And, what he was doing is, when he was a counselor for the girls, 2 girls in the 3rd year they walked to the post office to mail a letter. I mean, that sounds primitive nowadays. And in the post office, they used to have most wanted posters.
Right.
And the girls, it was pouring rain, so they're waiting for the storm to go, and they were looking over all the pictures. And who did they see? They saw Counselor John Berger. It was like, well, that can't be him. But it looks just like him. No, it can't be. When they get back to the school, they tell the dean. Dean comes to the post office, looks it over for close to an hour, is what he said. And he still wasn't sure. So he called the FBI phone number just in case. And so the FBI came the next day, they fingerprinted him, and it was him. So, and this was interesting too, because the officer that was in charge in LA of that case, this Tal Shapiro, was probably someone you've had on too, Steve Hodell.
Steve Hodell, no.
Remember, he's written three books, and he's the guy that says his great grandfather killed the Black Dahlia.
Ah, yes. Okay, so, that sounds familiar now. Yeah. You know, Alan, there's another kind of predator that's lurking out there, maybe not as evil and dangerous as a Rodney Alcala, but you still need to be mindful and protect yourself against things like online identity theft and people who are trying to steal your passwords. And the internet security experts are telling us we should be using a different password for every website. That could be a nightmare, you know, keeping track of all of those different passwords with our online shopping and banking and email and all the other essentials. Now, a complicated password might be more secure, but it's so difficult to remember. Well, now, there's a great solution. It's called RoboForm. You never need to remember or type a password ever again. RoboForm gives you stronger passwords and faster logins, all with a single click. It keeps all your devices in sync. And when you shop online, RoboForm fills in those long address forms with one click. It's available for Windows, Mac, iOS, and Android for personal or business use. And for peace of mind, RoboForm has around-the-clock support. It's one great solution for online security. Learn more at onegreatsolution.com. That's onegreatsolution.com.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to be buried in an avalanche?
Weird foreign feeling of despair.
Or how it feels to crash a skydive?
I remember hearing a thud, feeling my body hit the ground.
Or how you would react if you were being attacked by an alligator?
At the end of my leg is this huge alligator head on my leg.
These are the stories you'll hear on the podcast called What Was That Like? True stories told by the actual person who went through it. You'll hear from a victim of an attack.
Dragging me into the bathroom and saying, I'm going to kill you, now you're going to die.
You'll hear from a man who discovered a baby.
How could this be? How could there be a baby on the ground?
And you'll hear actual 911 calls.
Plinky County 911.
There's a man at my back door. He's trying to get in.
What Was That Like is a podcast about real people in unreal situations. Search for What Was That Like on any podcast app or at whatwasthatlike.com.
We all enjoy a little mystery. Every other week, One Strange Thing presents forgotten stories from America's newspaper archives. They all have something in common, a single element that can't quite be explained. Join us on One Strange Thing, and you'll hear about a man who was literally stricken with genius. A 21st century child who remembered piloting a World War II bomber. A mysterious, unidentifiable blob in Texas. And then there was the lizard man stalking through small-town South Carolina. From cryptids and disappearances to modern-day miracles, One Strange Thing brings you stories that are very real and just a little otherworldly. Subscribe now, wherever you listen.
Richard has tiny talking insects living in his sock drawer.
We have bags and we are living in Richard's sock drawer.
Conspiracy Unlimited with Richard Serrett.
Alan Warren, the author of Killing Game, the true story of Rodney Alcala, the game show killer. is here with me on Conspiracy Unlimited. So he's extradited to California on charges of rape and attempted murder of this poor girl, Tali Shapiro, but he gets off again. Why?
Well, because the girl, after she got out of the hospital, parents and the girls moved out of the States because they said, that's it. They can't take the violence anymore. They don't want to live in the U.S. anymore. So by the time 3 years pass and they get him back in L.A., they can't get any witnesses and they can't even get the girl to come to court. So they have nobody to testify.
So he cops a plea and gets off on a lesser charge.
Exactly. Contributing to a minor was the charge. It's kind of like a molesting. So he had to register as a sex offender, and he spent almost a year in prison, but then he was set out on probation. He got a 3-year sentence officially. So he's out on probation. And so what's he do? Within the first month, the probation officer lets him go to New York again. And so what's he do? He kills another girl.
Which, again, we don't learn about until DNA and many, many years later.
Yeah, and that was an unusual one, because that was the goddaughter. That was Ellen Hoover. She was 23, and she was the goddaughter of Dean Martin and Sammy Davis Jr.
Oh, and wow.
Her father was a big Hollywood club owner, huge Ciro's in Hollywood, which was huge with all the stars. So they put actually $100,000 reward to the capture and the finding out of who killed her. So she was like, it was a big news item.
I remember now, they found her body on the grounds of the Rockefeller Estates.
That's right. And that ties into him again. You see, now when we look back at everything he's done, he started doing things for a reason. When he was killing girls in New York, he was trying to kill with other serial killer motives. So he was looking at the .44 caliber killer in New York, and he would pick the same type of girls, the same age group.
Ah.
When he was in Seattle, three of the girls that they know he had strangled now were actually at first blamed on the Hillside Strangler.
That's right. He was interviewed by members of that task force.
Exactly. So, you know, he was actually scoping out girls in other cities, and he would go kill them. Like, now we know there's one in Wyoming, two in Idaho, Texas now, San Francisco. He would actually kill people throughout the states, and they would get lumped in under whoever was killing the most popular at the time. And he got away with all of it without even being suspected.
Oh, I see. So he was using the actual killers. He was using their motives, selecting the same type of victims, and using the actual killers as cover, in a sense. Actually, it's deviously, it's evilly brilliant, isn't it? So this is when he's working at the LA Times. He was a typesetter.
Yeah, he came back. He was working at the LA Times. Again, they never checked him. He had a record. It's just bizarre how he kept on doing these things and getting away with it.
Right. And now at this point, he's working as he's telling people he's a professional fashion photographer, and he's using this to lure, what, young women to his apartment? Is that his MO?
But you see, when he was back in California, he was primarily focused on underage girls, because most of the ones would all be 11, 13, 15. That was his real desire, I guess you would call it. When he went out of the city and attacked other girls, again, he picked the age that was appropriate. So they'd be 20s, 30s, even 40s.
But but these pictures that he was taking, they were, as you say, young girls. He was showing the photographs to colleagues at work, and weren't these were naked children?
Exactly. Boys and girls, not just girls.
And no one said anything?
No. And he did this for years. I don't know how he could have enough charm that people would not say anything or think, oh, that guy's kind of a little nutty, right? Not even have that feeling. They all enjoyed his company. and he would get away with it. And now these girls, and you got to realize what he started doing was he started torturing them. He started, so he would get a girl in the car. You can win a contest. I can take your picture. I'm a photographer. We'll win money. And some of them he would get phone numbers. Some of them he would get to come to his place, sometimes to a park. And then he would eventually kill them. But it started becoming long and drawn out where he would tie them up and he would beat them and then torture them. He started burning them.
Oh, dear Lord.
He started cutting them. He started doing things while they were still alive. They would pass out. Then he would wait till they come back again, come to. Then he would do it all over again. And when that's why I included so many of the autopsy reports was because almost every injury these girls were sustaining, they were still alive.
Oh, Lord.
Well, so he wanted to torture them for some reason. Then he started doing, like when you mentioned Hover, how he left her on the grounds, he started doing things like that. So in L.A., he found another girl that he left. She was 19, and he cut her up to where she was almost a round ball, like if you were a circle outside in, so that he could roll her in front of Marlon Brando's house, right in the little park right across from it, so that if you opened up Marlon Brando's front door, you would see this girl faced totally round toward you.
Oh, Lord.
And it was getting so much that by the time he was on his, I don't know, seventh or eighth victim, I also included that so people realized that he was disfiguring them so badly that they couldn't have any sort of an open coffin. None of the embalmers or the funeral homes were able to make it so that they could be presentable. They were so badly deformed. So he was on this. I don't know. He was on this mission or something to make sure that people, when they found the body, would see it in a really degrading pose, in a position, and that he also wanted them badly tortured, mangled. I don't know exactly why he was doing this. Like, they weren't people he knew. They weren't relatives, friends.
Well, obviously, an evil, sick individual derives some pleasure from this.
Yeah. I don't know how. I just look at his young age and up to 19 and how he had such a normal life. You know, four kids, working dad, mother, everything seemed to be good. Joins the army. And how it turns so quickly. And it just seemed to get darker and darker and deeper as the days went by.
So in 1979, after his appearance on The Dating Game, he picks up a young 12-year-old girl somewhere between Huntington Beach and her ballet class. This is Robin Samso. And she's found 12 days later, dead, of course, decomposed, in the Los Angeles foothills. And this is the one where they finally go to trial. How did they nail him for the Robin Samso murder?
Well, you know, what this is really bizarre. So he picks her up, and he gets her up in the foothills. And just when he's up there, a woman forest ranger drives by and sees him on the outside of his car with this young girl. And she said when she looked in her rearview mirror at him when she drove by, she got the creeps.
Mm.
But she goes to the forest office and says nothing. Then the next day she's driving by, and she sees him out there again in the same location, but there's no girl. And he's covered in mud and dirt all over his face and clothes. And she said maybe blood. I mean, she couldn't say for sure. So she continues to drive by, and she does nothing again, and she doesn't report it. She just leaves it. And then the next 2 days later, she's with a partner, a forest ranger partner, and they go down that, they're down the trail by where this was, where she had seen these, the guy and the girl. And her partner at the time sees some bones and jokingly kicks it toward her. It freaked her right out. And anyway, again, nothing gets reported. And then she said one of the nights she decided to go up there and check herself. And she said she found the remains of what seemed to be a young child. Again, she didn't report it.
What in the world is going on?
I know. When I was going through this thinking, well, what is wrong with her? Like, what? You're a forest ranger. You find bones or remains, you call the cops. Like, that's, I just didn't know what was going on here. I was trying to figure out what was. And so eventually another forest ranger finds the remains and calls the cops. This was almost 2 weeks after she originally saw
right.
them standing out there. So it ends up being the Samso girl. So eventually they question all the rangers and they get her in, and then she starts telling the story. So this ends up being a big problem because then they catch Akala and bring him to trial, but she ends up being a witness. But in two of the three appeals now, it's been overturned because of her testimony.
Because of her testimony.
And because of her.
And it went to the California Supreme Court. Didn't they throw it out because they said the jurors had been improperly informed of his prior sex crimes? I mean, why would that be inadmissible?
Well, I'll tell you what. Asking all the different people and the commissioner of police and talking to everyone down in California, if I told you what he said, I couldn't say it because there's so many swear words. But in essence, the commissioner says that bottom line, as long as we have the Supreme Court that we have in California, nobody will ever be put to death until that they've changed, until they're different. Because they're too liberal. And reviewing it, 65 of 73 of death sentences in California have been overturned by this Supreme Court.
Great. So in 1986, they have a second trial, virtually identical to the first, and it's overturned again, this time by the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals.
Right. Right, because they said that she was brainwashed by the cops.
The park ranger had been who found Samso's body, that she'd been hypnotized or brainwashed, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, after a while, it starts to get comical. And, the sad thing is these families have to go through trial after trial after trial.
Right.
For nothing.
Yes.
You know, he shows up in sunglasses and a nice sports jacket, and he's it's a game to him because he's going to get convicted, but it's always for death, automatic appeal, and he always gets off. It's just constant. It's just been an overturn after another. There can be another 12 victims now that has come up in the last year that his DNA has hit.
Right, because he took so many, like hundreds and hundreds of pictures of these young kids, really, many of them in sexually explicit poses, and they're naked and so forth, but they can't be identified now, of course. But we don't know. I mean, how many of those were his victims? How many of those went missing and have never been accounted for?
Oh, and that's the problem. And that's where it's coming up, because now they put on, now there's 215 pictures on the New York Police Department site under Akala, and it's also on the FBI website now. And what happens is people look, and then people are identifying them slowly. And when they find out who it is, and a lot of times they found out they were murdered or just gone missing. So, you know, we don't know. But the ones that they've been finding murdered, now that DNA is involved, they take the DNA, and that's where they keep coming up positive with Akala. He's getting so many hits per year.
Right, right.
We'll never get through this.
He may end up being the most notorious serial killer of all time before it's all said and done, because in 2003, there's a third trial, again, in the on the Samso charges. And I guess it was during this time that they start to really uncover his involvement in some of the other murders with DNA matches and so forth.
Right. Yeah, because DNA got permitted as of 2002.
Right.
So then they started running it. And the good thing California does do with all of their cases is they keep their rape kits on file, or their, you know, they keep the evidence for years, whereas a lot of states never did, like the Wyoming and Idaho and all those. A lot of those states never kept any of their files or records or
right.
DNA.
It was in the 2003 trial, the third one, which was totally bizarre, a total circus, because this is when Rodney Alcala decided that he would act as his own attorney.
Yeah, and actually he's been doing that pretty much ever since. And yeah, he comes out as his own, like I said, he comes out looking like he's a hot shot, and he, you know, when you look at it, he's really playing a game with everyone. He's just having a fun time.
He,
you know, I tried to, you know, to show some of the things that he would ask or show the jury and the things he would ask the cops. He would just either not have a question or say, did they find earrings? You know, that's just like bizarre question.
Right. And he was interrogating himself at one point.
Yeah. Then he starts doing himself. But when you look at him, he's got like a smile. He's almost like, this is great. He's having great attention. He asked for things. You know, he was showing the jury his 1978 dating game.
Right, as part of his defense, I guess, trying to normalize himself. And for his closing argument, he played Arlo Guthrie's song, Alice's Restaurant.
Yeah, this is just like a circus. And, you know, he got convicted. That's when they combined four other girls with Robin Samso. So he got convicted of all five murders. But then all five were on death, so he's getting five more appeals.
Right,
It's not, you know, and that was the one where Robin Samso's mother actually. This really blew me away. 2010 court. She's actually showing up to the trial every single day. She's sitting about 20 feet or so behind Alcala, the defense station, and she had a gun in her purse every single day.
Oh my.
How did she get in? I thought you had to go through. I still can't get an answer to this. How could she? And the very last day, we know this is true, because when she come out, he got convicted. She took her gun out of the purse and showed everybody.
Wow. And this is 42 years later, after her daughter had been brutally raped.
Yeah, I know. And that's what I mean. And these people are sitting through this for years, and they're going through trials like that take months and months, and not just one, two, three. It just keeps going, because now they're all appealed again. This is going to go on for years, and it's dragging through so many people. Their lives are being just torn apart.
Well, he's in his 70s now, and from what I understand, he's kind of frail. Wasn't he unable to show up at a hearing because of his condition? I mean, he's not likely to live much longer.
He gets sick. It seems like he has issues. He's had a few different issues and a few surgeries, and he's had some problems, but. You know, as far as it gets to the point where it's like, just put him down, but it's not my choice. It just continues suffering for everybody.
Indeed. Well, as you say, it is all a game for him, and his appearance on the Dating Game notwithstanding, he is the game show killer in more ways than one. Alan, this is a particularly gruesome, certainly evil to the core individual, Rodney Alcala. But it is a fascinating account, if nothing else, highlighting the total incompetence of the judicial system, criminal background checks. All of these things went by the wayside. Not only was he able to walk onto the set of the Dating Game and participate after having killed a number of people, later he became earlier he was a youth camp counselor. Just a horrible, horrible, tragic story from beginning to end.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing what he got away with, and I just don't know. Like I said, I just shook my head. I didn't realize until I was researching how much he really did and for how long.
How can people get a hold of the true story of Rodney Alcala, the game show killer? Killing Game is the title.
It's on Amazon, of course. In Canada, it's in Chapters, and in the U.S., Barnes & Noble.
Thanks again, Alan. Good night.
Thank you.
Well, that was just creepy. That's all I can say. Now, before I dim the lights in my little studio beneath the stairs, I'm going to let you know what's coming up on episode 18 of Conspiracy Unlimited. But before that, if you'd like to have your name entered into a draw for one of my Strange Planet collections on CD, volume 1 or 2, here's all you need to do. Subscribe to Conspiracy Unlimited if you haven't already done so, and then rate it and review it. Grab a screenshot of that and email it to me at richardserrett1@gmail.com. That's Richard Serrett, S as in Simon, Y because I love you, RETT1@gmail.com. Every Friday, I'll draw from a list of emails, and the lucky winner will receive a Strange Planet collection. I'll drop that in the post for you. Good luck. We're just nicely into 2018. So let me ask you, is weight loss on your mind? You know, unfortunately, the commitment to weight loss often fades fairly quickly. About 90 days, that's when most people give up, within that 90-day window. The key is having the right mindset, and getting thin and staying that way lies in our thought processes. And hypnotherapy can make all the difference. Now, clinical hypnotherapist Dr. Stephen G. Jones has created a set of 5 audio hypnotic sessions that apply the power of hypnosis to reprogram the mind and replace bad habits with vibrant, positive new habits to help you achieve natural and long-lasting weight loss. Weight loss hypnotherapy really works. And it's available now at a special discount. Isn't it time to lose those extra pounds? Check out Weight Loss Hypnotherapy right now at SmartClickSavings.com. That's SmartClickSavings.com. Coming up on episode 18 of Conspiracy Unlimited, one of the kings of the paranormal podcast, Jim Harold, with some spine-tingling tales. Until next time, I'm Richard Serrett. So long for now.
A new Conspiracy Unlimited with Richard Serrett drops every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at conspiracyunlimitedpodcast.com. Blow your mind. That is all for now. Oh, and remember to share and give a 5-star review because we have huge egos and need love. We're like cats. We need constant petting.